What's happening in the New Mexico legislature? Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host today for Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Our special guests include Walt Rubel, managing editor for the Las Cruces Sun News, and Sandra Fish with New Mexico in Depth. Today, we will take a look at the New Mexico legislature. Budget, budget, budget. How will the compromise to close the deficit for the fiscal year affect you? Who are the winners and losers? There's a proposal to legalize, tax, and regulate cannabis. What are the chances it will be signed? What's on your mind with the legislature? What are some of your priorities that are not being discussed in the legislature? Call us at 575-646-2212. Anthony Moreno is standing by the social media desk, ready to take your questions or comments today as we take a look at the New Mexico legislature. More after the news. Stay with us. Welcome to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. Good afternoon. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host today on Voice of the Public. Today, we are discussing the New Mexico legislature. Budget, budget, budget. Compromise, compromise, compromise. Where are we with the New Mexico legislature as we look to balance the budget? My guest today inside the KRWG studios, we have Walt Rubel of the Las Cruces Sun News, managing editor, and also Sandra Fish of New Mexico in Depth. Welcome to KRWG and Voice of the Public. Sandra, how's it going?
Great to be here.
Walt?
Great to be here.
All right, so I'm just going to come out and right off the bat, first impressions of this year's legislature. What are your immediate impressions, Walt?
Well, when they're not able to pass the feed bill, that's a bad sign. And just to, what the feed bill is, what the bill that pays for the legislature itself. And it's always House Bill 1. And the way it works is they come in, and that's always the first bill they pass. It typically takes 2 days. It goes up to the governor. It sails through. Well, this year the governor vetoed. Well, this year the Senate substituted for it, and then the governor vetoed it. So we can't even get the rudimentary, let's fund the session thing started before the fight started.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join us live today on Voice of the Public, we are discussing the New Mexico legislature. What bills have been signed? What bills will come to law? You can also join us on social media, where Anthony Moreno is standing by the social media desk, ready to hear from you with your questions and comments. Sandra, what's your first impression?
My first impression is that you still have some really sharp divisions in the state house, and that's and between the House and the Senate, and that's why that bill to fund the legislature didn't initially make it through and had to be done twice, and even then had some line item vetoes from Governor Susana Martinez. You have House Republicans who are trying to make a stand. They're no longer in power, or they don't control the majority, but they threw up amendments to that feed bill to really cut the legislature's funding that the Senate ended up not agreeing with. And the Senate also, you will talk about this some more, really wanted to put some extra funding for the courts in that bill. And that has been vetoed twice by the governor.
Let's start with the budget, okay? The Senate and House came to a compromise to close the deficit for the fiscal year. Before we get to what you like about it, let's start with what are some glaring issues that stick up right at you.
Well, there are two things. The first thing they did when they came in is they had to pass what they call a solvency bill. And so that's not the main budget bill for the next fiscal year. That is just fixing, plugging the hole in the current fiscal year. And one of the ways they did that was taking money from the school districts, and especially the school districts that had high reserves. Las Cruces schools lost $3.5 million because of that. And it just seems to me that that is sending entirely the wrong message. I mean, I understand that they wanted to protect the poor districts, but in the process of only hitting those districts that have high reserves, you're punishing school officials for doing what you want them to do.
Which is solvency.
Yeah, exactly. Saving money, making the tough decisions, not spending money when you don't have to, and then the state swoops in and takes that all away from them.
Sandra?
You know, that's a really interesting point that Walt makes, because that debate was really heated, and different lawmakers were trying to protect different districts. And if you look, though, at the overall thing, I mean, the governor wanted $120 million taken away from the schools. So
$120 million.
It's not as bad as it could have been.
That's right.
So you know, what was the final number at the end of the day that they took out?
I think it was about $49 million.
So we went from $129 million to $40 million. I mean, how is that possible that the governor came in wanting to take out that much money from the school districts?
That's a good question. Senator, you were there. I mean, what was the argument for that?
Well, it's not like she comes down and talks to anybody about it. She just, that was her suggestion. And it was a non-starter in both the House and the Senate. And the Senate was the place that both of the all of these things started out. And they looked at other places. There was a big debate over economic development, you know, money. And I mean, it ends up being a compromise, and it's not always a compromise that works for people. But it's what these people can get done. And, you know, they've sort of taken care of funding for this fiscal year, but not exactly when you look at the courts, because the governor's vetoed the court funding from two different bills. Then the state finance board last week loaned the court system enough money to have jury trials through April, but it's still not enough money. And there's a bill moving through to fund the courts through the rest of the year. But is she going to accept that, or is she going to veto it? It's really unclear. And you know, when you decide to loan them the money instead of giving it to them outright, it just seems to be, you know, what do people have against the state court system?
Well, specifically, what does the governor have against? Because it's not the legislature. The legislature understands they need the funding. They've passed it twice.
And you have a governor who's a former prosecutor that would understand how the court system works. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to call in with your questions or comments on today's Voice of the Public. My guests are Walt Rubel, Managing Editor for the Las Cruces Sun News, and Sandra Fish of New Mexico in Debt. She is a reporter. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. I mean, right off, looking at the proposed budget and the proposed cuts and all of those things, do either of you have any winners or losers, I mean, from this proposed budget?
Well, we were talking a little bit earlier, and to me, it seems pretty clear that there are two losers, the courts, which we've already talked about. And one thing I would add to that just quickly is, on that loan, they also made it so that it would become a grant if the legislature isn't able to pass that funding. So they'll have to pay the money back, assuming that something gets through. The reason they had to take out the loan, though, is because even if it goes through the normal process and they get the money, they will have run out of what they need to pay juries by the time that gets through the process and signed by the governor. So that just tells you, you know, how dire straits they're in. And the other losers, I think, were the school districts. In terms of winners, I don't know. I mean, I think...
Is it too soon to have a winner?
I think it may be. We will see what comes out of the main budget bill, and I know that there are some areas that they will, you know, be trying to beef up, and maybe by the time this is done, they will have helped the courts out. But at this point, I don't see a lot of winners.
You know, I do see a winner, and people were talking about this in the hallway of the Capitol in those first two or three weeks, and that's the House Republicans. People were saying, wow, the House Republicans lost control of the House, but they're still running the show there. And one of the things that happened with that bill to fund the legislature, with the solvency bills, is that suddenly the bills would come to the floor and the Republicans are proposing these amendments, like amendments to take money away from the pension system and put them into schools or something like that. Now, there's some argument that you can't constitutionally take money out of the state pension system and use it to cover other parts of the budget. But it's a vote that comes up when you're campaigning, and it's a vote that has been done in the past, and then Republicans typically are using that vote against Democratic candidates. when they're running for re-election. And the House Republicans put people on the record on some floor votes that are going to come back to haunt those House Democrats in the 2018 election. And I'd say the House Democrats, to an extent, you know, were losers because they were not on their toes when this was happening. You know, there are ways parliamentarily, well, I can't say that word. There are
we know what you mean.
To try to avoid this sort of thing, and they just weren't very, they were played.
One of the interesting things to me is that you have a whole new leadership this year among the Democrats. They were in the minority for two years.
Where do you see the leadership moving? I mean, you know, compared to the previous leadership.
Well, that's what the previous leaders are gone. Kenny Martinez is gone. Mm-hmm. Ben Lujan has died. He was the speaker for years and years. And so you have Brian Agolf. You have Cheryl Williams Stapleton. Who am I forgetting, Sandra?
I'm trying to remember who Patricia Roybal Caballero.
Caballero, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and you still have Nate Gentry there as you know, he's a super feisty House Minority Leader now after being in the majority, and Republican House Speaker Don Tripp resigned before being sworn in.
Yeah, that's what the point I was going to make is. So you have all these new leaders on the Democratic side, and on the other side you have Nate Gentry, who is this forceful, dynamic. And yes, Don Tripp was the speaker, but Nate Gentry was running the House for two years. And I could see very easily how he could slip right into that role again if the Democrats allow him to do it.
The governor indicated that she will not accept any new taxes, but may was open to closing some loopholes in our current tax system. Big question is, are there enough politically viable loopholes to balance the budget?
Oh, no. And I think what she's talking about, if I'm correct, is the bill that Bill McCamley was working on originally with Jason Harper that is supposed to be revenue neutral. McCamley doesn't support it anymore. Jason Harper has picked up John Arthur Smith and Carlos Cisneros from the Senate as co-sponsors. And it would completely rehaul the gross receipts tax in the state. I mean, it was...
That's not a loophole bill either.
No.
That is an overhaul
That's
of the
right.
gross receipts tax to become a 5% sales tax and adding back taxes on food at about 3% with a few exceptions. And I mean, that's a pretty radical change, and it's unclear if the governor supports that sort of
thing. It absolutely is. I just, you know, and you're right, that's not a tax loophole bill, but that's one that I'm paying a lot of attention to just because I knew that, you know, Bill was working on it. And it's something that the state needs to do, in my opinion, the gross receipts tax. And over the years, they've given up so many exemptions for every new company that comes along. Anybody who wants to move into the state gets a tax exemption, and that stays on the books forever. And it is something that they really do need to clean up.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join us today on Voice of the Public, I'm Edmundo Resendez. My guest is Walt Rubel, Managing Editor of the Las Cruces Sun News. Also, Sandra Fish, reporter for New Mexico In Depth. We are covering the New Mexico legislature. What's on your mind as the legislature looks to possibly close some loopholes? What about education? What about the court systems? Is the New Mexico legislature addressing issues that are important to you? Give us a call right now at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You can also join us on social media, where Anthony Moreno is standing by the social media desk, ready to take your questions or comments on today's Voice of the Public. Speaking of social media, let us go to Anthony Moreno right now, who's standing by the social media desk. Anthony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Edmundo. I also want to let people know that we have the Facebook Live up right now on our Facebook page. So like KRWG on Facebook, you can put your comment there on the live feed as well, and join Edmundo and Walt in the studio there. You know, one of the things that you brought up at the beginning of the show that obviously was a big issue at the start of the session when you had the Chief Justice of the New Mexico Supreme Court addressing the legislature about the need for funding was that I don't know if we really discussed how important, how big of an impact that is to the court system within the juries. I mean, you have different juries. You have the grand jury that may be hearing, 20 to 30 cases alone in different counties. How big of an impact that could be, because you're sitting there where people are taking off work to go and sit in a jury room to hear these cases, and they're getting paid minimum wage in many cases, or just above it, and not having a paycheck coming into a lot of New Mexicans who are just struggling or living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, that's a pretty big impact, I would imagine.
It's $50 a day, if I remember right, what they pay jurors, and that's one of the things that the governor is proposing to save money, is that they reduce that amount. Obviously, if you have a good job and a responsible employer, you don't get dinged for doing jury service, but a lot of people don't have that.
And that is not, I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, no. You know, my wife just served on jury duty just 2 weeks ago, but she happens to have a job that does pay for her to serve on jury duty, but not many jobs do.
No, that's right. And so that's going to be a real issue, I think, with something they already have a big challenge trying to fill.
575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation as we discuss the New Mexico legislature. Are we about the halfway point now? The New Mexico legislature?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so what's been
not
accomplished?
Not enough has gotten done.
Okay, so what's been accomplished? What things have you seen out there that you wanted the legislature to accomplish? And is there citizen activism taking place within the Mexico legislature? Are people talking to the legislatures as to what needs to be done? Are you an activist who is participating with your legislatures? Call in right now and let us know what's on your mind at 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. Walt Rubel, Managing Editor for the Las Cruces Sun News, and Sandra Fish are our guests today on Voice of the Public. Let us go to Martina, who is standing by on the KRWG phone line. Martina, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi, this is Martina. I'm not sure if you can hear me well.
We can hear you wonderfully.
Super, because I'm pulled over to the side of the road because I literally work as an adjunct highway flyer between Hatch, Deming, and Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. I've lived in New Mexico since 2001. Through the University of New Mexico, I have a master's in public administration. Through the University of New Mexico, I have a PhD in communication. And I really feel strongly that this state holds both students and educators hostage. And I see it as a cross-partisan issue, not a non-partisan issue, but I can't even voice the level. If you want to talk about economic development, where does anybody think we're going to have a future when our students don't even stay in state because they can't find jobs after graduating? I mean, how can we cut any education from pre-K through K-12? We're already bouncing along the bottom of the 50 states. Where are our legislators and where are our governor being responsible to our future?
Thank you, Martina, for joining us on Voice of the Public. 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212. Tying economic development to education.
Yeah, I understand that argument, but the last revenue forecast or the latest revenue forecast just came in yesterday, and it's not better. We talked about they had to plug the hole in the previous fiscal year budget. The next fiscal year budget, the projections is that they're going to have to cut $125 million. It's a 2% cut they're $125 million short of meeting current commitments. And so if they don't, in other words, they have to find $125 million to cut just to break even. So you can't get there without looking at education and healthcare and all of these other big ticket things.
Sandro, I mean, again, you know, tying education to economic development.
Well, and I would tie both of those back to poverty in the state of New Mexico, which is also second in the nation. And you've got to do something that addresses all these things from the root cause. And part of that is helping people who are in poverty, either, you know, if they're adults, to help them get job training or and find better employment or, you know, re-education to help adults in poverty with small children, to help those kids get off to a good start and be prepared by the time they get to school, and improve the school system so that employers want to come there because you've got a base of workers that have that education. And, you know, right now they're just trying to plug these budget holes. It's really difficult to address the in all-encompassing situation. You do have a proposal to ask voters to take a small percentage of the permanent fund and spend it on early childhood education. You know, the University of New Mexico has been studying some efforts by the public education department where they go out and into people's low-income people's homes and really work on literacy efforts from the time, you know, children are infants and babies, and really to work on that. And the results are promising, but you can't do that everywhere without more money. You know, there are a lot of people, Republicans, I don't think the governor supports taking that money. There are other people who are fiscally conservative who don't approve of using the money that way, but there is $15 billion in that fund. I think the measures that I've seen would not appropriate the money if the fund got to $12 billion or below that. But, you know, that's one of the things that's being debated there, that's more of a big picture look at how does the state of New Mexico improve itself in terms of bringing people out of poverty, getting people a better education, and having people available to employers who might want to come to the state?
The governor doesn't support that. She said in the state of the state that she doesn't. And that's something that the newspaper has always opposed. I've always opposed it. But I'm starting to change my mind on that one. The argument that neighboring states don't have nearly the savings that we do, they invest their money while we're keeping ours sitting in a bank, that's starting to make some sense to me.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation. As we discuss the New Mexico legislature today on Voice of the Public, I'm Edmundo Resendez. Walt Rubel is our guest. He is with the Las Cruces Sun News. He is the managing editor. And Sandra Fish with New Mexico in Depth is joining us as well in the conversation of discussing the New Mexico legislature. Let's go to Esteban, who is on the phone line. Esteban, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public.
Good afternoon. My one question is from the lady that mentioned the PhD program that she has. The bottom line is this: within the last 5 to 7 years, the state did pass the legislature bill that they would take on up to 50% of a new hired PhD who was a native New Mexican and been within the undergraduate program and had gone on. My son is finishing his PhD in 2017 at UT Austin, and he supports both the University of New Mexico and the New Mexico State University Anthropology Department to let him know that he's going to be finishing. He did this a couple of years ago, and that he was interested in finding a way back. He gave them the link to the actual 50% that the state would pay for up to 2 years to see if it would be a workable deal and if he would work out and meet their requirements to be offered a follow-on position, if anything. And nothing ever transpired, and the pushback she got was, as academia, we will not let anyone dictate how we will hire and then offer permanent positions. I can understand that, but then again, we're asking, how do we get the brain drain to not leave? My son has accepted he'll defend in May. By June 30th, he's accepted a post-fellow at UC Santa Barbara, which is very well for him and his family. But again, he's a native New Mexican, born and raised, undergrad at New Mexico State, grad MBA at UNM, and then had to go do his PhD at UT Austin. He's doing great, but the bottom line is there's nobody trying to advocate. You can pass laws, but if you're not holding the regents, the the chancellor, university chancellor, president, and educating these directors, department heads, that there is funding and there is a law to bring them back, then you're going to continue to have this brain drain.
Thank you, Esteban, for joining us on Voice of the Public. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Question is, how did the legislature affect higher education in New Mexico?
Well, they have really taken the brunt of the cuts over the last couple of years.
The special session.
Well, the special session, but I mean, going back to last year, they got whacked. 2 years ago, they got whacked. NMSU is in better shape than most because Chancellor Carruthers started a program, you know, a couple of years ago, well, more than a couple of years ago, where he started cutting back on positions, you know, right-sizing, I think was the term he used.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, I mean, you know better than I do. You're here every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult situation.
Sandra, how do you see it?
You know, one of the things that is interesting about this is that I see states around the nation where higher education has been being cut for quite a while, especially since the downturn in the early 2000s. And so, you know, to some extent, it's New Mexico catching up with what's happening in other states, and you end up with a budget where, you know, you pretty much have to provide a certain amount to public education. That's a large amount of money. Medicaid is a significant portion of the budget, and you have all these things competing, and it's almost easier to cut higher ed and say raise your tuition.
Yep.
And so they're in a difficult spot. But anyone who's in state government is in or funded by state government is in a difficult spot these days.
Let's talk taxes.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got a governor who opposes taxes. Senator John Arthur Smith proposed a 10-cent a gallon increase in the state's gas tax. Where are we with that?
Well, I don't think that bill's going to go through, but there is a different bill, House Bill 63. And this sort of borrows from what the legislature did a few years back when they passed that huge corporate tax bill. And part of that was they took away the hold harmless money from cities and counties, but they said you all can pass your own tax rates if you want to, or tax hikes if you want to. And so what this bill would do is essentially the same thing. The state would not pass its own tax increase, but it would allow local governments to pass an increase of up to 5 cents per gallon, and that money would have to be used on road construction. That has passed 60-6 in the House, so with pretty good support. It's gone over to the Senate. I don't think it's had its first committee hearing yet, but that is, it seems to me, one way where they're trying to get around this governor's edict that the state will not pass any tax increases, but maybe we can go ahead and let the cities and counties. Now, that's kind of a bad way to do it because it adds to the whole problem with the GRT, but it is one way to get around the governor's, you know, ironclad, we're not going to do it.
You know, I'd jump in there and say that actually one of the Senate committees actually passed yesterday three different bills that would increase the gas tax in different ways. And I think that you're going to see the Senate come out with a gas tax increase. And this House bill to allow local gas tax increases, who knows how that's going to go over in the Senate, because they're looking at these things to raise money statewide. And they may just be thinking, well, you know, let's just, I think that Senator John Arthur Smith, chairman of the Senate Finance Committee and the Legislative Finance Committee, is at this point is just saying, let's just send this stuff to her and let her veto it.
Yeah.
And it's going to, I think you know, the 2015 session ended in like this big explosion over capital outlay, not bills not passing, and then not spending $300 million or so, and they had to come back later and reach an agreement like in June. And at this point, you're halfway through the session. I think you're kind of headed for a similar, you know, just a bad ending here, because how is the budget going to be resolved?
Well, that was my question. Does House Bill 2 get passed, or the equivalent? Does the big budget bill get passed during the 60-day session, do you think?
It's dependent on so many of these other things, like, you know, can they pass? You know, Jason Harper, Representative Jason Harper, this Republican from Rio Rancho, is a really smart guy. I like him. He's super nerdy. And he has been examining the state tax structure for quite a while. And he has been working with people on both sides of the aisle for quite a while, and he's come up with this plan to really revamp the gross receipts tax into a sales tax. And, you know, he is geeky on the details. And when you see somebody like Senator John Arthur Smith supporting his bill, you've got to say, wow, you know, that has some possibilities potentially. You're going to have to get something like that, or something like the gas tax, potentially done before you can actually have a balanced budget bill. And that's the thing is, you know, like Jason Harper's bill.
Yeah,
Where is the governor on that?
I don't know. I just think the food tax is a non-starter for too many people on that bill. I'd like to see it get some traction, but I just think, you know, the bishops will come out against it, already have come out against it.
They already have.
Think New Mexico is going to defend that with all they've got. I just think that for too many people, that's going to be a non-starter.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. You're listening to Voice of the Public. Today we are discussing the New Mexico legislature. What work has been accomplished as we are at the halfway point of this session? What work have you been advocating for? Let us go to Ron, who is standing by KRWG's phone line at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Ron, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Thank you. I just had a comment. I'm glad to hear that there is some talk of raising taxes, and I guess I just, in looking historically at the cost of rising goods and services, I don't think there is a business model that would say don't increase the investment because the cost of these goods and services is increasing. You just have to increase the investment, whether it's a business or the state. And I think taxes are the answer. You cannot keep cutting education. In education, you will be cutting your throat in the future. And I guess I feel bad for the politicians that think they're going to lose the next election because they talked about raising taxes. And I guess it's not so much a question as a comment along those lines.
Thank you, Ron, for joining us on Voice of the Public at 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Sandra, you've been following a number of things, including lobbying, finance reform, campaign finance reform. Let's talk about where are we with campaign finance reform.
You know, yesterday the state Senate passed with six people against it, and let me get back to that. Senator Peter Wirth's campaign finance reform bill that would really clean up a lot of inconsistencies in state law that have been around since the 2010 Citizens United decision that allowed unlimited campaign donations and unlimited independent expenditures. And that bill it defines coordination between a super PAC that takes unlimited money and makes independent expenditures and prohibits them from coordinating with political parties or candidates. It also requires those independent spenders, you know, a lot of the super PACs we think of, they're disclosing their money on the Secretary of State's websites, but there are actually nonprofits out there and that are spending money. It's not their whole deal, but they're spending money that is sort of indirectly aimed at impacting elections. And this bill would require them to disclose what they're spending and where their money came from for those things, especially if it's within 60 days of a general election or 30 days of a primary. You know, the other thing that this bill does, however, is it increases the amount of money that legislative candidates can get. This current cycle we're in, we've started, they can take $2,500 for the primary and $2,500 for the general, this would increase it to $5,000, double it, $5,000 for the primary and $5,000 for the general. And that's why Senator Jeff Steinborn was the lone Democrat joining five Republicans to vote against it, because he doesn't think the contributions need to be increased.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 if you want to join in on the conversation today on Voice of the Public. Today we are discussing the New Mexico legislature. Let us go to our social media desk where Anthony Moreno is standing by. Anthony, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Oh, thanks, Amundo. Once again, we want to remind people that they can like us on Facebook and tweet us their question at KRWG on Twitter. One of the things that hasn't been brought up yet was the possible legalization of marijuana in New Mexico. And I was wondering what the thoughts were on the possibility of that actually, the legislative part of it actually happening here.
Where are we with marijuana legislation?
Well, I know the Bill McCamley's bill went through its first committee, but interestingly, it went through with a no recommendation, which is maybe a warning sign. I don't know. I mean, what that means is the committee isn't going to hold the bill up, but they're not going to give it an endorsement either. So it is advancing. I don't know if that was a bump in the road or a warning sign or not. Do you have a sense on that, Sandra?
You know, I think that there are a lot. There's a lot of moving parts here, and I think that that bill is difficult for some people. And how do you go about it? Again, the governor, Susana Martinez, says she'd veto any actual law. So potentially, you could put it to voters in 2018 and put it in the Constitution. You know, because it's just not going to happen while she's governor unless the voters approve it. So that's what you've got to do. You have some other lesser sort of things going on in which you have a plan, a couple of different bills that have passed both the House and the Senate that would legalize industrial hemp, and which is allowed under federal law if you're conducting research studies on it. And I talked the other day with Albuquerque Democrats Senator Cisco McSorley, who's the primary backer of this bill. Now, Governor Susana Martinez vetoed the bill 2 years ago, but he's kind of more positive about it, and it would be a big cultural boon for New Mexico if people could grow hemp. It's become a cash crop in other states. Even Kentucky is allowing it. So you've got that. You've also got some bills that would improve sort of the medical cannabis industry in the state by letting the cannabis growers grow more plants. They say that they have a problem in that they can't produce enough product for all the patients who want it. And McSorley has another bill that deals with, you know, allowing those people to grow more plants, allowing veterans to access to medical marijuana without getting approval from a doctor, because that could harm their VA benefits. So you've got some other things that are moving their way through there. It remains to be seen. It seems like there's some, you know, there seems to be some support poll-wise in the state for legalizing marijuana, and you now have you have Colorado and Nevada and California are nearby that have all made it legal, but, you know, I don't know that that's as high up on the scale of things.
Let us go to Gerald Miller, who is joining us on Voice of the Public at 646-2212, 575-646-2212. Gerald, welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi. I recently ran for District 3 School Board in Las Cruces, which is the second largest school district in the state. However, only 2,209 people bothered to vote, which is like 2.2% of the population who could vote or who are registered to vote. When I taught English in China for the past 11 years, education was the number one priority in any city, any region, poor, rich, families. Nothing would be spared the expense of education. And when you come here, it's education seems to be the last in people's priorities. And the second thing is New Mexico has an abundance of sun, but very few buildings are solar powered. And why is that?
Gerald, thank you for joining us.
Two questions.
Thank you very much for joining us on Voice of the Public. Well, I mean, low voter turnout. I mean, let's look at the previous election. I mean, was there a mandate by voters to the legislature to tell them this is what we expect for you at the legislature?
The last school board election?
No, the last election.
I don't think so. I mean, the Republicans got turned out in the House. But I didn't see any mandate for progressive reform. I think there's some frustration with the governor and with the gridlock and with the inability to get things done. But I didn't get the sense of any great sweeping mandate for the Democrats.
Sandra, let me ask you this. You're up at the legislature. Where is the governor in all of this? Is she an arm twister? Is she? What's her role with the legislature?
That is the $24,000 question, and the answer would appear to be that maybe she's on the fourth floor. I don't know. I mean, people don't ever see her there. She made a brief appearance before a group that was visiting the Capitol to lobby last week. I think it was a business group coalition or something. She made a brief appearance, and then a handful of reporters tried to talk to her as she made her way from that group over to her elevator that takes her to the fourth floor. And she refused to answer any questions. She couldn't stop and talk to them. She's too busy. She's got all these appointments. You just never see her. And I think I've worked in state capitals in other states, and if a governor has priorities, they are working it. They are talking to lawmakers. You see them out there talking to groups that come by. I mean, the Capitol has been filled with people lobbying on one issue or another or having their special day at the Capitol. And, you know, there's one group that it sounds like she's talked to so far. She's just not around. And I've talked to lawmakers like Senator McSorley. He said he's tried to talk with her. He's sent letters and emails to her staff and trying to get some sense of where they're at on the hemp bill, of what he could do to get them to sign it. And she is not around.
Yep.
And she's not, except with the veto pen, she's not making a lot known about what she wants to see happen in the legislature. It's a little bit of a lack of leadership here.
I think more than a little bit. I think you're exactly right. I think it's a complete lack of leadership. And it's not just other states that, you know, you can use to contrast. It's Bill. You can look at Bill Richardson.
Bill Richardson was a hands-on. I mean, he was an arm twister.
He was completely an arm twister. And he was the kind of guy who, he made it very well known at the start of the session what he wanted.
What were the governor's priorities this session? Did she have any priorities?
You know, if you were to look at the state of the state, they were the same thing that they always are, that she's talking about the same kind of law and order. She wants to get tougher on all kinds of different crimes. She wants, you know, LEADA money and JTIP money, job training.
What's
money?
LEADA money?
I'm sorry. LEADA money is basically a closing fund. It's economic development.
Okay.
So she wants that, and she wants the get tough on crime stuff. And third grade retention and the Hannah Scandera education reform. That's what she wants, I think. That's what she's wanted for 6 years.
And Sandra? I mean, where is it getting her?
You know, where it's getting the people of New Mexico is
I guess that's
over.
More important. Where are we as citizens of the state with regards to what the governor is trying to accomplish? Because, again, you know, you look at a governor that is not out there on the forefront of the conversation as to, you know, she came out and said, I'm opposed to any new taxes. But did she offer any solutions other than cuts?
No. And, you know, there's been some softening by her and by the Greater Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce that maybe they would consider some, you know, tax adjustments or something. But all these other things have to be met first, and most of it is cutting. And, you know, when you don't have, I mean, you can have bipartisan, certainly in the Senate is highly bipartisan when they're working on these budget bills. And you can have Republican Jason Harper from the House trying to work with other people on a tax solution. But if you don't have the executive branch working with these people and negotiating with them, it's almost impossible to reach a solution if you don't have that executive leadership there. And it does a disservice to the state. It's going to cost money when the lawmakers don't have a budget or don't have enough money when they have to come back and have a special session and bring all this staff back to Santa Fe. It's disappointing.
I really think it goes back to the very first year. Her very first year as governor, she vetoed 98 bills, including, I think, 32, if I remember right, mm-hmm. that were passed unanimously. So that means that means the brand new governor is coming in and telling members of the legislature, many of them have been there for decades, many of them from her own party, no, I know better than you on 32 issues that were passed unanimously and 98 that were passed in total. And I just think that set the tone. We're not going to cooperate. We're not going to work together to get things done. I'm going to tell you what I want, and if I don't get it, I'm going to veto it. And I think that's where we've been for 6 years.
Sandra, is there a priority regarding infrastructure spending?
Well, for one thing, there's not going to be much infrastructure spending. There's, you know, we have a budget problem. There's maybe $63 or $64 million available in severance tax bond money. And people are talking about actually taking that money and just, like, putting it in the budget, mm-hmm. Which I think if it's $64 million in bonding, I'd have to find the details. I'd have to think about the details more to think about if that's even possible. But you're not going to have money for individual lawmakers to divvy up. There are some talk out there about this is the perfect opportunity when they can't divvy up that money for their personal projects. Why don't we reform the system and make it more equitable, make it so that you're fully funding projects, make it so that, you know, you're funding actual infrastructure instead of baseball fields in Albuquerque when, you know, smaller rural areas just need some water systems fixed. But I don't know that I've seen in talking with lawmakers, I don't know that I see the willpower there to give up that sort of control that they have to go out and pass the pork around after the legislative session in the good years when they have the money.
We've got 7 minutes to go in the show, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let's go one last time to our social media desk where we've got Anthony Moreno standing by.
Gas tax. We just got a big no on that from PJ. Also, PJ weighed in on, why are Walt and Sandra being so disrespectful about the governor? We got that question from them, not the venue. Speaking of that, I was kind of curious. I wanted to ask Sandra and Walt this. You had mentioned that there just isn't getting anything done with the governor right now. There's not a lot of communication being involved there. You know, she is standing firm on no new taxes. I'm curious, Sandra, you mentioned you had talked to the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce. Does that send a signal to business owners to a point to they may not want to invest or make any moves right now? Would they maybe be more inclined to just sit back a couple of years and see what happens?
Are we looking forward towards the upcoming election, Sandra?
You do see business owners who are concerned, and that chamber, I believe it was, there was a story about this in the Albuquerque Journal last week. They did a survey of business leaders in the state, and only 16% thought the state was moving in the right direction. And it's a concern. They're concerned about, you know, the perception that there's a lack of ethics in state government. They're concerned about the tax system. They're concerned about the education system. And, you know, I don't intend to be disrespectful of the governor. I think it would be great if she were out there doing something and being a leader. And I got to say, tell me where she is. Tell me when she's doing that, because that's what people need. They need somebody to stand up and say, here's the direction we need to go, and here's how we're going to get there, to provide that roadmap. And that roadmap, it probably, you know, getting tougher on crime right now or third grade retention, that doesn't get you to where you're going to go to solve the state's severe budget problem.
Walt, are we bashing the governor?
Are we bashing the governor? Well, I hope we're having a fair evaluation of the legislature, what has happened so far this session, and putting that in context of what has happened throughout the 6 years that she's been in office. We're taking all kinds of calls, and if somebody wants to call in and defend her and say that she's doing a terrific job,
Well, let's do that. Let's go to a call right now. As we wrap it up, we've got 4 minutes. What's on your mind? We've got Pamela. Pamela.
Yes, hi. And you guys are bashing the governor. You're not telling me how you're going to make the taxes less or anything. You're just sitting there bashing the governor doesn't do this and the governor doesn't do that. Tell me what we're going to do to fix my state. I was born in New Mexico, and I don't like the way it is going right now. And I don't want you to tax the gas. I want you to look into marijuana. I mean, there's all sorts of different things that you can do, but bashing the governor is a political move, and do not do that. Fix the state.
Thank you, Pamela.
Bye.
All right. So we've got 4 minutes to go. Let's wrap up the conversation. I mean, where do we go from here? I mean, what should citizens do to motivate their legislatures to move on these things? Sandra, I mean, you know, at this point, it is about citizen activism to get citizens to place those phone calls to say to whether it's the governor, whether it's to the representative, their senator, to say what work needs to be done.
And I think people like that last caller says she doesn't want higher gas taxes. She wants legal marijuana. Well, she'd better be calling the governor's office and making that point clear, because the governor is opposed to legalizing marijuana. And it is. The governor's the top elected official in the state. She was elected by the people, and the people should hold her accountable, as they should hold their lawmakers accountable. And some of those lawmakers come back on the weekends, and they hold town halls. You need to check the Las Cruces Sun News and find out when that's happening, and go out and talk to these people and tell them what you think, because they do listen.
What I would say is the great thing about a 60-day session is you get to this part of the session and everything is wide open. I mean, there are a million different things that could happen and nobody knows. It's a wonderful thing.
Okay, we've got 2.5 minutes to go. Any closing thoughts as to what happens next?
Sandra, you're there. What do you think?
You know, I think that you're just going to see a lot of longer days and longer nights. Like, I listened to the State House until about 8:30 or 9 last night. And I think you're just going to see longer and longer days, because they've got so much yet to do. There are so many bills out there that have yet to be heard. Each house has more than 400 bills introduced, and there's just a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, that's are we going to have a rush?
That's what I mean. I mean, you don't even know what's going to get to the floor at this point.
Yeah.
And so it's this big mystery. We wait to see how it all shakes out. When you're there watching it in person, it really is a fascinating thing.
Sandra, any bills you're looking at in particular that have drawn your attention?
You know, Celine, one of the places that I'm seeing the biggest activism is on House Bill 50 and Senate Bill 48, where that would increase the background check law for gun buying in the state. And both sides are really activated. You've seen a ton of people at the Capitol supporting and opposing those bills. They're very controversial. You saw the National Rifle Association a week ago spend about $44,000 in electronic communications encouraging people to contact their lawmakers. You see Everytown for Gun Safety on the other side supporting those bills. And they've got all these volunteer mom activists coming to the Capitol, and they spent a ton of money, more than $200,000 in campaign contributions in the last election. And that's the place where you're seeing a lot of the citizen activism up there so far.
Sandra Fish, thank you very much for New Mexico in Debt for joining us on today's Voice of the Public.
Thanks.
Walt Rubel, thank you very much for joining us on Voice of the Public, as always. Thank you for being here.
You bet.
You've been listening to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org. I'm Edmundo Resendez, your host and producer. Our technical director is none other than Mr. Jacob Lockwood. Our social media desk reporter today is Mr. Anthony Moreno. You've been listening to Voice of the Public on 90.7 FM, KRWG.org. It is now time for Intermezzo with Leora Zeitlin.